Hello and welcome to another episode of the Big Knowledge Football Dynasty Podcast. I'm Sonny and I'm your host. What is up? Welcome in. So yes, today is Saturday. It's April 10th and we are getting closer to the NFL draft. I can happily report to you that I have been doing more studying. I have been studying scouting reports. I've been studying film. I've been getting my list together. I'm kind of preparing my rookie draft list. I would say it's sort of like a rankings, but much more flexible than rankings, and just kind of like getting a lot of the names together. So today's episode, I'm happy to bring to you. I've done this episode, a similar version of this episode, the last 2 years. First year I called it like studs you could get late or free. I think last year I just said five receivers that you can get that are potential fantasy studs or some. I don't know exactly how I word it. Every time I just kind of change up. So anyway, that is what it is going to be today. Five kind of late round flyer type wide receivers that I think have the potential to be studs. And so when I say studs, that means it's usually kind of the bigger body type wide receivers and the guys who could potentially break out into number one type wide receivers, but that are going much later. And so those are the last 2 years ago, I had Preston Williams on this list, which was one of my successes, and Jalen Hurd and some other ones. Last year, it was Gabriel Davis, a few other ones like Javon Jefferson, but ended up getting drafted like in the second round. So that's where I don't always know exactly where the guys are going to get drafted. They may end up getting drafted higher and then get pushed up. The way I look at it in terms of our fantasy is that any guy that's going to be going third round or fourth round in our rookie drafts, if you're talking about 12 team, talking about no defensive players, third and fourth round type rookie players, these are the kind of players that, you know, the rounds, the places we can expect to get these guys. I'm also going to be talking some trade talk, just a little, there's some biases that I like to bring up, some different cognitive stuff, just to kind of give you ways to maximize our trade potential. When we're doing trades, a couple ways that you can kind of maximize or minimize damage done, like kind of play better defense or be aware of certain biases you may have. So we'll talk about that as well a little bit later. But first, there's a little business I want to get to, and that is that there is going to be a mock draft. I told you, it was like last episode or something, that I want to do a mock draft. I want to do like we did last year on YouTube, live mock draft, me and some other people talking, you know, just kind of going through pre-draft, before the NFL draft, so that we're kind of putting ourselves out there. Scott Connor of the Dynasty and Chill podcast, who joined us last year on the mock draft, and I love his podcast, will be joining us. And also John June, who just joined me recently with the Fantasy Diagnostics podcast, will be joining us. So two great podcasters, two great minds. I'm very excited to have them. And the third guest is actually a mystery guest. And that mystery guest could potentially be you. Because what I want to do is I actually want to bring one of the listeners on. Somebody, and I'm going to have to go through a little process here, and it may take some work, and I'm not sure how it's going to go. But I would like to try this. I would like to do this mock draft where I have my two fantasy analyst guests. These are people who are in the industry. But then I would like one guest to actually be somebody from the listener group. And you could be, if you have a podcast or something, that's fine. I want to kind of bring it to my listeners and say, hey, you know, if there's been this time when you listen to podcasts and you always say, I could do this, I want to sit in on one of these. Well, here is your chance, because I'm going to open up if you want to find me on Twitter, you can find me at BigKnowledgeFFB. You can email the show at BigKnowledgeFootball@gmail.com. And what I'm thinking is just hit me up. Say, hey, Sonny, I think that I'm worthy of this. And show me something. Show me that you've been doing your homework. Show me that if you participated in drafts, something this year that shows me that you're ready to do a mock draft and you have reasons why you're going to take these people and that you're ready. You're going to have to be available Friday night. That's this Friday the 16th at 8 o'clock Eastern to do a live YouTube show. You will have to have an iPad or some sort of device that will allow you to do video, so we can all have you on the video with us. I will probably just have to pick somebody randomly if there's enough people who want to do it, but you also have to be kind of qualified. I'll have to kind of, and I'm excited to just, even if I don't end up picking you, I would like to start getting some names of listeners who have ideas, who are kind of coming up with stuff, because the more that I look at our industry right now and the more I kind of listen to podcasts and just kind of go around, there's some very strong voices in the industry and there's a very strong echo chamber that kind of surrounds those voices. And so when I think about, well, what kind of ways can we, you know, find an edge in this kind of environment, one of the biggest things that stands out to me is ask the listeners, find people who have ideas. This is when I first started this podcast. I mean, the very first episode, that's what I was thinking I was going to do, was create a podcast where it was like a database of ideas, trade ideas, different things. And people would give more ideas and more ideas so that we would be like stronger as a unit, whatever, whoever listened to my podcast, because I never knew how many listeners I would actually have. So now I'm thinking, okay, well, this is a way to kind of involve some of the listeners, not just through maybe this mock draft, but also through other kind of, you know, having guests on and have them, you just be listeners, people who have reached out to me and said, I've got these ideas. This is what I want. You know, this is something that I think is a good idea. What do you think? And I'll actually bring you on. Maybe we'll just, you know, have little segments. I don't know how it's going to work, but it's something that I'm actually interested in doing. I think it could not only just, you know, create a fun environment where it's kind of user-friendly and listeners are getting involved, but also just kind of creating some new ideas, some fresh ideas, not just from the same, you know, industry people as well. So, like I said, hit me up on Twitter, BigKnowledgeFFB, it's BKF Sunny. Email the show at BigKnowledgeFootball@gmail.com. Let me know if you're interested in doing this. It's Friday night. We've got to, I mean, this, I'm putting this out on Saturday. This is Saturday afternoon, so I'll probably put this out tonight. So when I put this out, I've got a few days. People hit me up. Let me know if you're interested. I'll try to work out some kind of random choice thing. And then we'll see how it goes. Should be fun. And for those of you, if you don't want to be in it and you just want to come, join us, YouTube, 8 o'clock Eastern, comment section. You can start telling us who you pick. I mean, there's a lot of ways this could work out. Maybe someday I'll have somebody come and actually be the voice of the listeners and people that are watching. But I just, you know, last year we had a very successful pre-draft YouTube draft on YouTube. It got a lot of views. I think just the timing of it and everything. This year, I haven't put any emphasis on the YouTube channel. I don't know how much success or how many people will actually show up live. It doesn't matter to me. I just want to put out good content. I feel like these live mock drafts to me are super valuable. You got multiple people. They have to make the choice. It's before the draft, so you're really kind of putting yourself out there. Just so many good things about these. I really enjoy doing them, and I really enjoy listening to other people do them. I think when we look at all the talk and all this, this is one of those most valuable processes that you can learn a super large amount in an hour and a half kind of span. So I'm excited to do it. Like I said, check it out. Let me know if you guys want to be a part of it. Okay, let's get on with the show now. So before I get into these five wide receivers, these kind of late round prospects, I want to talk a little bit about the draft in general, because now that I've kind of gone through it and just kind of felt like I've absorbed a lot more and seen a lot more players and kind of looked at the scouting reports and looked at their pro day numbers, which I know a lot of people have said the pro day numbers were blown up, but I was actually very disappointed by a lot of these pro day numbers. I mean, even the ones that were inflated, like you're talking about Jamar Chase running a 4.38 or whatever. Jamar Chase ran a 4.38 at his pro day, which means most likely he didn't, you know, it's over that. It's probably closer to a 4.4 or 5, you know, at best. So a 4.45, I compared that just a year or two ago to like an A.J. Brown, who's at 225 pounds and ran like a 4.4 flat at the combine. And he was amongst many wide receivers that put up ridiculous numbers. I think these last two classes of wide receivers are going to kind of skew us. And then on top of that, I feel like when I look at the overall draft, the makeup of it, it looks like a kind of a weak defensive draft from what I'm understanding. And it's, so it looks like there's going to be a lot of offensive names really spilling through those first couple rounds, especially when you're talking about the quarterbacks. It's a very heavy wide receiver class, and wide receivers are valuable if you get good ones and difference makers, guys who can spread the field. But in terms of fantasy, in terms of dynasty, in terms of players that are going to make a real difference for us, I'm worried that it's not that great. I'm worried that I see a lot of players like I was talking about Jamar Jefferson, and then I see his pro day and he weighs 205 pounds and he has a 31-inch vertical. So it doesn't even matter to me if he, yeah, his pro day is 40 time. There's a lot of things that I can let go, but when I see those two things, he's 15 pounds or 10 pounds lighter than I thought he was, and he's not very explosive, and now it's very hard for me to be excited about him. I could still kind of, you know, be hopeful, but he's, you know, that's like being Devin Singletary without the Matrix vision, you know, being able to see the future like Singletary does. So to me, at the very first, Amon-Ra St. Brown, a lot of players that I thought, okay, he could be potentially like a difference maker. Once I actually saw their combine numbers or their, quote, pro day numbers and kind of put that little bit of extra, you know, what the combine would be, maybe what we can expect from this class in terms of real difference makers, I think there are some, and especially at the wide receiver position. But when I look at the running backs, oh man, it gets hard, and I feel like we're going to be reaching for the best of them and just hope, you know, there's going to be a lot of misses. And like I said this before, I thought there was going to be a lot of misses by the NFL. I think there's going to be misses by us too, only because it's not going to be, and this is like me totally projecting. Like, and every time, you know, every year there's like, oh, this is a good draft, this is a bad class. This is just my gut feeling. This doesn't mean that I'm going to put much weight on this. This is a very small weighted thing. But I do also, like, this is what kind of came out after all of this watching and all of the scouting and everything, just kind of looking at the class and comparing it to what's in the league and thinking, okay, draft capital, what's going to be going here. And I still haven't looked at the rookie drafts yet. I know I'm going to do that before this rookie draft, probably on Friday, but I'm pretty much so clear on where I think, but I do want to make sure that I get names that I haven't seen, where they kind of jump or push, and it will really give me clarity on, this is what I can't wait for, is that moment when you see where you're different than other people, and there'll be certain players that I'm like, oh, I'm definitely targeting him if he's going in the third round, or I'm going to be like, oh, wow, he's going that high, definitely staying away from that guy. That's what I'm going to be interested to see. Haven't got there yet, but it's okay. Like, I really like being in this place where I'm just going on the scouting, the video, what am I seeing, what's my gut telling, what, you know, what's the overall big picture for this player, and then we'll see, you know, if everything lines up, if it kind of goes in that direction or completely steers off. So I'm thinking about the quarterback class right now, and thinking about the running back class, and it just feels like, while I think the quarterback class has huge potential and huge talent, I think that it may be kind of, with that in the wide receiver class, might be kind of propping up and just having a few key talents that will make this draft look good in the end. So I just want that to be known as I kind of go through these prospects, not just today, but through all this. I'm going to be, I may, you know, change my mind, especially after, you know, the draft and I see positions, but that's what I'm afraid of, is I'm afraid that I'm going to see the draft, or we're all going to see the draft and see these players going a lot early, you know, second round, third round, Tutu Atwells and stuff that I look at and I go, really? Do I really feel like Tutu Atwell in the second or third round? Or I've seen him project in the first, that's crazy, whatever. But if I see that and I go, okay, does this guy compare to the other wide receivers that I was just seeing in the second and third round the last couple years, the same kind of prospect line? It just doesn't feel the same. It feels like, to me, it feels like Tylan Wallace is going to be this major target for me in the second round, that I feel like if I miss him, and I'm just throwing darts after that and not feeling good at all. So there's going to be certain players that I feel much more comfortable about, because there's a lot of players that I feel like they might find a team, they might find a spot, they might make a difference on the NFL team, but in terms of fantasy, I don't see a real way, you know, a lot of ways to work. So with that in mind, that's why I've got these five players today. I do feel like these five players, they're all wide receivers, have at least the potential in terms of, they have the physical tools, they have the upside that's there, they just haven't realized it yet, and so they're not, you know, they're not going to be drafted with enough capital that you're going to have to pay that kind of price, but there's still potential for that number one. And so I always like to look for those. Like I said, last year was Gabriel Davis. I'm always looking for somebody like that, because in the late rounds, you want to have some names. And to hit on one of three, one of five, to me, I'm happy with that, because you just got to find somebody that you can keep on a roster, keep churning. So with that said, I'm going to put them in the order of the players that I think will be the highest valued, you know, so maybe start of the third round, to the player that I think is the lowest value, that maybe free agent, might not be drafted, might be in around. I don't know. Like I said, till I see it in the draft and see all the things, it's not real clear for me, but I'm pretty sure these guys aren't going the first two rounds just because of the other names that are available and kind of the sense I get about it all. So first name, Amari Rodgers, Clemson wide receiver. I'm sure many of you heard about him. He is talked about quite a bit, but I just really like him. And I think that when you compare him to a lot of the names that are in the tier right above him, I think he could be a better player than almost any of them, given the right situation, those kind of things. And I think he's just going to slip far enough that he's going to be a value. He's strong. He's explosive. His dad is the wide receivers coach for Baltimore now, but he was wide receivers coach for colleges, USC, different things. So he has been doing this a long time, and his son has kind of decided to be a wide receiver because his dad was a wide receivers coach. In fact, he was a high school running back, I believe, and then he transitioned to wide receiver middle of high school because his dad was a wide receivers coach and he wanted to train with his dad, from what I read. So that's a kind of a cool thing, just that he has that background of a running back. He looks kind of like a Deebo Samuel sometimes, where he's physical, he will run over you. He has that run after the catch ability, but he also has the outside, inside, very versatile, you know, package as a wide receiver. And he was the number one receiver for Clemson this year. I think another thing to mention about him is he is a senior. But unlike a lot of seniors who kind of were forced to come out, he had an ACL injury a couple years back that kind of forced him, I think. He played in 2019, I guess, but he didn't have like that big of a season. And when you're looking at that draft class and comparing, it just was no good reason for him to come out in terms of that year. So he waited the extra year, became the number one guy. So it's not as big a red flag, you know, that he's coming out as a senior. He came out for a good reason. And now he's actually an extra year recovered from that injury. So many things to like about Amari Rodgers. He, to me, you know, may climb up into that second round depending on where he gets drafted. In terms of our rookie drafts, he could climb, you know, I don't know how many people he would climb over, but he could get up to the early second round even if like it was an amazing landing spot. But for now, I think that he will be pushed down behind enough of these names that you could probably catch him there right in the early third round, and I think it's going to be a tremendous value. He could be one of the best wide receivers in this class. He also has some return ability, very much like Amari Rodgers. Okay, so the second player I want to talk about is Nico Collins of Michigan. He is a player I'm interested in because I'm just curious to see where he ends up going. I have a feeling just because he played at Michigan and there's not a lot of production and it's hard to gauge that he's not going to get drafted real highly. But there's potential that he could be a riser as well. But in terms of physical tools, he's got a lot of physical gifts. Not the most refined route runner. Definitely, you know, there's questions in terms of, you know, like all the technique and all those type things. But when you look at just the physical gifts, when you look at his competitive nature, I mean, I watch him and every time he gets tackled, whether he's getting the best of it or not, he's up and he's yelling at his competitors. He's very competitive. He's just fierce. And I liked a lot of, he doesn't mind contact. He's above the rim type player. A lot to like about him, especially considering that he's not getting a lot of hype. I've heard his name a few times and I've kind of, you know, obviously the scouts, there's some scouts that kind of like his physical skill set. But I think when you kind of put him in with the rest of the names, I think we could see him fall down into that third round and be one of those potential players that could really rise once, you know, if a team finds a use for him and kind of like I said, I'm at this point with my concern about this draft class, I'm definitely looking for upside. And I'm definitely looking for guys that you know, Nico Collins and the next player as well, that I can get a gauge as we go into camp. I'm going to be listening for those kind of tea leaves and just any kind of indication to see if they're kind of popping because they have the physical gifts to pop. So if they're not popping, it to me, it's almost a sign that they're busting just because you should be hearing some wow factor if they're at all acclimating. And so the next player I want to talk about is Tamorian Terry. So Tamorian Terry, Florida State, is a similar type player, not quite as physical and not quite as big as Nico Collins, but kind of similar build. He's got a lot of speed, or at least, you know, in terms of his size in this class, he didn't test all that well, but he's got speed. Like when you see him on the field, he plays fast. And from all accounts, there's some different like low level scouts that I've seen that just love this guy. And so there's something about him that people have seen for a while. The Florida State, you know, it's hard. It's really hard to tell what is going on with that program. It's been disastrous from what I've seen and what I've heard. That it's just like another one of these programs like Michigan where we may not have gotten the best chance to see what Tamorian Terry could do. And so that might push him down. And then I think he's coming off an injury as well. So that might push him down. There's going to be things that are going to push him down that I think he's going to be a name that we can get later. That in the end, when it all, you know, hashes out, there's not that many guys with the potential to be, you know, those number one type alpha receivers. And both Nico Collins and Tamorian Terry are. So this the next player I want to talk about, he's not necessarily probably going to be that alpha, but I see something in him, and I just kind of like him, and I haven't heard anybody talk about him. And so John Palmer of Tennessee, he's a senior, but he's a 21-year-old senior. I thought that was really interesting. So a lot of times you see, you know, someone's a senior, and you expect they're going to be a lot older, but he's not. I didn't like do too much research. There's some of these players that I will eventually, once I kind of get to draft time, I'll start doing the extra deep dive where I'm listening to interviews, and I'm really trying to find out any kind of key personal details. I'm not there on everybody yet. Guys who I really kind of intrigued by, I'm doing a little more of that. But with Josh Palmer, not there. Just kind of seeing what I saw on film, seeing what I'm scouted here. Feel like he's a guy that there could be a place for him. And because he's kind of, like I said, under the performance was steady with Tennessee, but there was like really not a lot of it. Even though I think he was their leading receiver in this last year. It just doesn't look that exciting to people. I think when people watch him, they're not going to be all that excited. But there's a skill set there. He's raw, like rough, rugged. You know, he's thick. I love his legs. I love just the way he kind of showed body control when he was catching, kind of fighting for the ball. Just an awareness, a football kind of awareness. A lot of things I liked, and that's what I kind of read as well. So Josh Palmer's to me is one that I'm looking late. I'm looking really late. Maybe even just as a free agent add after the rookie drafts is just kind of just adding names if you have a little extra roster spots before you cut time or something. He's a name that I'm looking at and thinking, okay, this could be more than what's currently being advertised. And then there's one more name, and the last name is Cornell Powell. He's the teammate of Amari Rodgers. In fact, he was the second leading wide receiver for Clemson. That was also a senior. And when he went to Clemson, he had to sit behind so many good wide receivers. You're talking about Mike Williams, T. Higgins, you just go down the list, and he's kind of been there sitting behind different players, not getting his chance. And then this year he gets his chance, and he shows that he's actually a pretty good player. And again, he's kind of like Josh. I would say he's a little bit like Josh Palmer in the sense that he's not super physically gifted. I don't think we can say he's going to be one of those premier alphas. But as we get later and later, you can't really expect that. I think that in terms of physicality, in terms of football player, in terms of having seen it done, when you're on a team like Clemson, you're seeing it done by the best. And now he's been able to kind of go out and replicate that. And he's got similar skill set, and he's, you know, just something there, especially when you're talking about as late as he could go. He could be just completely free everywhere you go, and then you don't know, you know, if he shows up on a roster, at least he could fight his way up. Again, it's hard to tell at this point, but I like throwing out the names. I like talking about them. I just, it's interesting to me when I see a player like Powell, because I didn't know anything about him. I really don't watch a lot of college football. I kind of go in after the season's over, but it reminded me of Mac Jones in the sense that there's a reward sometimes for sticking with these big programs and not having, you know, like people always talk about, oh, if you go to this college, you go to that college, then, you know, the smaller colleges, you'll be a starter right away. You'll be a star. That might be true, but there's something given to these players when they play for these big programs and have success. Even if it takes to your senior year, somehow that might just be enough to get him an opportunity. So it's just interesting to me that someone shows that much patience. It's either... I wonder, like with Mac Jones, now it's like same thing with the wide receivers like this, where it's like I have to wonder, like, did you not have confidence in yourself to the point where you just accepted your role, or did you have so much confidence in yourself that you figured it would work out, or somewhere in between? Because, you know, there's like a maturity and a confidence thing. There's you sometimes players just say, I'm not going to stand for this and I'm leaving or whatever. But up until this year, there was a sacrifice you had to make to do that. And so I don't know. I think about those kind of things, and it makes me curious, and I wonder, you know, what's behind that. And that sometimes is value. It's value because it's a misconception. Okay, so I think that's a good segue now. We're talking misconception to the second part of this podcast, and that is I want to talk just a little trade. I always like to kind of include a little theory, a little, you know, cognitive bias kind of stuff, some social psychology. I'm not a doctor. I'm not a social psychologist. I play one on this podcast because it's fun, but that's for me what I get to do. I like to do it and talk about the players, and I make my own opinions or whatever, but just know that that's it. I'm an opinionated guy who likes to play social psychologist, but I have no credentials, and I'm not expecting you to take this seriously. This is all kind of for entertainment purposes, but I do think these kind of things help in terms of just understanding how myself works. Like a lot of times when I go into trades in the off season, I go in and I go, okay, what do I need to do? What's my next best step in terms of like getting a trade done? If I'm in a league and I want to get a trade done. So I'll start by telling you, I'm not the guy who makes a lot of trades. I'm not the guy who just gets trades done. I feel like if you want to get a trade done, you can get a trade done. The easiest way to get a trade done is to pay the price. Go talk to the person, find out the price, and pay close to it. That's the easy way to get a trade done. That doesn't necessarily mean that I want to get trades done. What I like to do is I try to maximize my trades. The way I see players and the way I see Dynasty, I feel like it's not like this player is worth set amount. The player is worth a range of way below that amount and way above that amount. And so you might put that amount, whether it's a trade calculator or some kind of rating system, on that player, but realistically he has a wide range, and some players' range is not nearly very wide, and that's why their value is so much higher, because it's almost like you can be 100% sure of what you're getting. And so when you pay for consistency, you pay for the ability to know. But most players, the majority of the players we use, don't have that small little range. You might think that your favorite player or whatever has like a really tight range and he's going to score between this many. I don't think so. I think that there's a lot of young players. There's a lot of changes every year that dictate the fact that we don't really know the future, and there's no way we can predict it. And oftentimes, just when you think you like had a great trade, when you actually look back, it might not be nearly a greatest trade as you thought. Or if you thought you had a terrible trade, you might look back and say, oh, that's not near. I actually won that trade. The ideas that we have when we make the trade is we almost always forget to go double check and see what actually happened. I remember my bad trades much more than I do remember my good trades. But in a way, I always kind of forget to go back and actually say, what was I thinking at the time I made this trade and what actually happened? I don't have the time and energy to analyze my personal thoughts, but I do try to keep aware of that overall like feeling, because when it comes right down to it, this is where we get our value in trades. If let's just say that let's just give it a number. Say you see Tyler Lockett worth 70 points, right? And so if you have Tyler Lockett and you want to sell Tyler Lockett, you're looking for somebody that values him at 90 points, right? That's ideal, because there might be people out there who value him at 90 to 100 points, right? So you're looking for someone with the higher end. Maybe nobody values him. Maybe everyone just sees him right at 70. But you definitely want to avoid those people that are seeing him in at the 40 and the 30 or whatever, right? So my whole point to this is that range is not like set in stone. It's not like your range is 70. It changes, and it changes oftentimes just by the interest shown by other players. That's why it always, like, as soon as somebody comes to you about a player and says, hey, you want to trade this player? Immediately in your brain, you go, what is his range? And then you think, well, they must be interested in him, so let's put him at the top of this range, right? And so that is the trick, is that even if that person has, let's say, Tyler Lockett, and their range is 50, and they have Tyler Lockett, and you want to go trade for Tyler Lockett, the moment you let them know you're interested, they're going to go for the range of at least 80, 90, right? Even if they really believe he's at 50, that's, you know, in some cases you might find the person who actually values him. But most people are looking at the overall value of the big picture, the market value, and then their own perception of that, of where they see them in that market. And of course, they're going to try to get the top market value for that player. And so this is why I bring this up. There's a couple different things I want to talk about, a couple different biases. And the first one is the anchor bias. And so the anchor bias, what it is really, is the idea that whatever number is set first is usually the number that is started from, the working point. And so this is very important in the sense, when I talk about, if you go to somebody and you say, hey, I'm interested in this player, if you go and start talking negotiations or have them come to you, whatever that is, you're playing with those ranges. You start that range conversation right away. And so what I like to do is, when you're talking about setting an anchor, you're talking about setting that price. And the key to this is making the offer first. And so this is basically my point, is I think there's a number of reasons why it benefits you to make the offer first, rather than put your player on waiver, you know, put your player out there on the trade block and hope people come and just throw a bunch of stuff at you. Like I've talked about in my other podcast, the art of the overpay kind of thing. That those, you know, so you can hope for that, and that might happen. But most cases, you're not going to get that. And oftentimes, if you go and you start inquiring and just talking to somebody, then you're already, you know, starting that conversation. So whatever offer you bring is the anchor. You're setting that anchor. And so the key to an anchor is not setting something that's a ridiculously bad offer. If you go and you say, hey, I want to offer you this, and it's so far away that they're just offended by it, then you've done nothing. It's not working. In fact, you've lost a trade partner probably. But if you're reasonable enough and you're willing to put yourself out there and put true value next to it, but just not quite as much as you truly value them, you'll find that oftentimes it'll be at least set, and they might just reject you outright. They may not even want to negotiate with you. But if they ever want to come back to you, they know where your range is now. Now they know that your range is low, and you've set that range low. So you've already set that conversation. If the conversation continues, then that's where you can really gain value, because no matter where you go from that trade, it's always going to be based on that original trade offer. They won't realize it unless they're very fully aware of this cognitive bias. And that's why I say you should be aware of this, because if someone makes you an offer and you're sitting there and you get that offer first, without realizing it, you're going to base your entire negotiations on that offer that came in. And therefore, whatever they said, if they said it on their side, then you're going to be negotiating from a hole already. You're already negotiating from a hole and having to work it back to even just to get it to even. That's not fun, and that's not an ideal place to be in when you negotiate. So that's why I say this is a key thing in just dynasty and like life. And sometimes you gotta beat them to the punch. You gotta throw it out there. And so don't worry about offending someone or making people mad. Like I said, you look back and you'll see so many trades you made that you thought were good that were bad, or you thought were bad that were good, that if you really want to sit there and if someone's going to really be offended off of a, you know, like I said, if you're not making a fair trade offer, then that's another story. But if you're making a fair trade offer and somebody's like, yeah, that's just a really terrible offer, that's on them, because what they're probably looking for was the low value. They wanted the value, and you didn't give them the value. So you're not trying to be necessarily liked. I mean, if you go to the car dealership and you say, hey, what's the price on this car? Okay, you know what? I'll give you $2,500 less than that, and you do some negotiating, whatever. The person who's selling you the car is going to be like, oh, I hate these kind of buyers. These are the buyers I hate. I never, you know, they take all my commission, and they're not going to like you, but they're still going to sell you the car if it's within their reason and it's in their benefit. They're still going to do it. but they're not going to like doing it. You're not the, you know, the little old lady or the rich guy or whoever it is that just comes in, you know, the kid whose parents are buying the car and they say, that's what I want. And there's no exceptions. I want that. There's no negotiating. It's just, all right, well, this is our price. Here you go. So of course they're going to love that buyer, but why? Of course, look at the reasons why. So I don't want to be loved necessarily by all my trade partners. I don't care if they think, oh, you're cheap. Well, maybe I'm cheap. Maybe I don't have to make a trade in this situation. So if I'm going to make a trade, I want to make sure that I give myself the right trade, you know, something that gives me some buffer, or at least start that way. And I already have, you know, some kind of range in which I'm willing to go. And then I'll, like I said, I'll shop around it. The other thing about it is, let's just say it is Tyler Lockett and you have Tyler Lockett at a certain range. Tyler Lockett is in a range of a lot of other players. So when I trade, a lot of times I'll look at that other range and see if there's another player in that range that's equally productive, that kind of gives me the same feeling, that I feel this valued and useful in the same way. And then I start shopping around for that person. And eventually you might just find, it's like, you go, take it back to the guitar dealership. If you go to Honda and they say, okay, we have no deal, but then you go over and Mazda's having like some major sale. Well, if the two cars are comparable and one's having a sale, might be a good idea to just go with the one on sale. So that's another reason to, you know, you kind of look at it, you talk to them, but the best thing is to identify the players you want and send out those offers, set that anchor where you want it, and then just see if you can work from there, because most often, you know, they might push back and then therefore you'll get a little bit. And the other thing I would say is, if you are getting offers, I would always suggest you counter. Even if you like the offer. Now, like I said, there's some times when I just get an offer that's so over the top that I'm like, you know, I really can't ask for much more. It's the, you know, kind of like gotta have it kind of trade. But this is not, most of the time, that's not the deal. Most of the time, somebody sends you an offer, they're expecting, they're like giving themselves a little leeway. And so you need to take that leeway back and improve your side a little bit. Take a look at their roster. See if there's something that's very similar but suits your needs better. Because oftentimes people are gonna try to give you players that they are not necessarily high on, that, and they're gonna have other players that might be right in that range that you know, it's just like looking at their roster will help identify that for you. So this is another point I wanna make in terms of the flip side of that, which is if you have a good roster, this is my personal experience, I have nothing to back this up, but I found this to be very true, especially on some of my best rosters. When I have a very good roster and I start negotiating with somebody and they take a look at my roster, it seems like suddenly the price goes up. It's like, oh, wow, you got all this stuff, well, I want some of that. And next thing you know, it's like, it doesn't matter. So that's another reason for me, I feel like it's good to just get that trade out there, because if I send it to you, you might not even think to look at my roster. You might just think to look at the trade itself and not go, ooh, I want this off your roster. Because like I said, it's good to look at somebody else's roster. You might find something else you like. Well, you don't really want them looking to see what else there might be if you don't have to, right? If they're just going to take a moment and look at that trade come in and they go, yeah, it's not bad, I'll accept that, you might just be better off. Or like I said, if they go to a counter, then, you know, at least you've set that anchor at a certain place. So that's the first bias I want to talk about. The second bias I want to talk about is it's called consistency bias. And I think it's a really important one, because it's so relevant to fantasy football, to our industry. And this little point I'm making here is not so much like, this is just a little trade thing, but in the big picture, there's a lot to be gained from this particular bias. And so the consistency bias is as simple as saying, we as human beings like to be consistent, our actions with what we say, with what we do, we like to keep consistency. And so what happens when you do that is that you find that you favor things that you do more than maybe you should. And so the best explanation I can hear it is the Robert Cialdini book, Influence. He talks about this, and he talks about if you go to the racetrack and you bet on a certain horse. Before you bet on that horse, you can be looking at all the horses and you're not sure. You're just kind of thinking, oh, maybe I'll take this guy, this one, this good odds here, whatever. But once you put that money down and you've actually placed the bet and put it into action, now your confidence in that particular horse that you picked is much higher than it was just before you bet. The only difference, nothing's changed with the horses. The difference is that you are suffering from the consistency bias, which is you want to stay consistent with all of your actions. So now that you are already invested in that horse, you are now going to believe that that horse is going to win, that you're going to have better chances. So this is so prominent in football, because when you talk like dynasty football, especially in just fantasy football, and because when you talk about everybody, myself included, you may notice whenever I talk about certain prospects, I'll mention whether I own them, like a lot of them. Sometimes I'll mention that I own none of them. I don't do this really to like tell you about my teams. It's because I think it's really important to know if somebody who's got an opinion on a player is invested in that player or not. Because if you are invested in that player, you are naturally going to be inclined to see the positives, to want to think they're going to do well and want them to do well, so you're going to think they're going to do well. It's like a circle, right? Same thing goes with the negative. If you are not invested in somebody, then you're naturally not going to believe in them. That's why you didn't invest in them in the first place, right? So it's going to snowball the same kind of effect. And so that, to me, is really kind of an important just aspect to look at. And I think that it almost should be like mandatory for all of us as fantasy analysts to have to come out and say, once you take a strong take on somebody, you have to say, like, I own a lot, I own none. If you own a lot or you own none, you maybe need to stay out of the conversation, to be honest. Like, it should only be people who really kind of have a medium investment or like a mod, you know, because I feel like if you don't own any of a player, that's why I would say, like, Kenny Golladay, it's hard for me to hate on him. Of course I'm going to hate on him. I don't own him. So it feels like every time I hear somebody talk about a player, I want to ask, like, do you own them? How much do you own? Because it does make a big difference. There's a bias there, the consistency bias. And so along those lines, one way that I found that I can take advantage of this, if there's a player that I want to move off my roster or I'm looking to trade away, oftentimes this is like how it works. If I am in a league with a lot of people, a lot of my leagues, there's a lot of leagues, and I have a lot of the same people in multiple leagues. So I will go and I'll look for those other people. Like, where is this guy on other rosters? So if there's a player that I'm not feeling that great about, and I'm looking to kind of move him for his top value, right? We're talking about ranges. I want to find someone who's got him at a high range. Well, someone who's already an owner, somebody who's already invested, is most likely going to be the type of person who's going to have an eye range on that person. So that's always a good little trick that I've used, is just try to find a person with that player or multiple pieces of that player on their rosters, and you'll find most likely they're going to be an easier trade partner for that player because their actions have already shown that they like this player, and therefore they'll be more likely consistent with that and find that player to be valuable based on their previous actions. So that is it. I know it's a lot of blah, 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 kind of hard to, you know, it's like, I don't know how well it goes in terms of podcasts, but I always like to put it out there. I always like to kind of make you think and just try to give you some kind of twist. I think there's all kinds of good stuff with this. Like I said, when it comes to looking at the big picture, when it comes to Dynasty, we are at a point now where it's just so saturated. I talk about these deep players, the depth players. There's no player that's not talked about. I mean, there's like nobody. So there's no way you can find somebody who's not been talked about on 30 different podcasts and at least had some kind of bio read about them. And everybody's talked about it. So now it's just a matter of how do we value them? How can we find an edge? How can we, you know, see something different from the norm? How can we find the outliers? How can we break away? And so that's what I'm looking for to do. I'm always trying to find, you know, new ways to look at it, new like exciting ideas, anything, any kind of approaches. They're not always successful. They don't always make a lot of sense. Sometimes, like I said, I have some wild ideas, but I'm always trying. I mean, I tell you some of the craziest little ideas I've had. When I send trades, sometimes I will capitalize the first letter of like my player's name. So if it's like Tyler Lockett, we just talked about, I'd be like Tyler with the T and L, the real capital. But then their players that I ask if I'm negotiating, right? I'm just like typing out words. I'll put their players' names with a lowercase last name, because when you look at somebody's full name in uppercase, it just looks so much better than when you see like a weakened version of it. So like, to me, that sounds crazy. Like, there's probably has, and I don't do it all the time, but every once in a while, like, it feels better to, when you're like placing names, that big name, the full name with the capital I's, is better than the kind of weak name. So I don't know. It's just a theory I came up with, and I've tried lots of different things. I don't know the effects of them all the time, but I try, and that's why I think that I'm always trying to share with you some different thoughts and stuff, and that's pretty much what I got for you today. So thank you all for listening. If you want to find me on Twitter, you can find me at BigKnowledgeFFB. It's BKF Sunny. You can email the show at bignowledgefootball@gmail.com. If you guys want to be a part of this live mock draft, this is your chance. Just hit me up on Twitter, send me an email, something to let me know that you're interested, that you'll be available Friday night, that you've got video services, and that you've done some work, that you're ready to do a draft. And we'll see if we can make it happen. Like I said, I can't pick everybody, but at the same time, I'm looking to kind of involve some different listeners and stuff, and just kind of just get some new meat in here, just some new ideas and stuff. And I think that's an idea I'm excited to do. So as always, thank you all for listening, and we will talk to you soon.